Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
We're really at the dawn of a new world, and the way healthcare is being delivered is rapidly changing. And so there's a plethora of digital and mobile health applications that are transforming the way healthcare is delivered, and they're growing rapidly. And it's already, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars a year industry, but, you know, has such diverse range of applications, including those mobile apps, telehealth, wearable devices, but also the ability to personalize this for optimal delivery of care. For us and for people who are engaged in this space, it's a great way to collect data, to provide meaningful feedback for people who are using this to track chronic conditions and symptoms associated with that, and ideally also improve access to care, particularly for those people who might live in remote and underserved areas. As you'll find out today, this is also a wonderful way to look at changing behavior and managing that over a longer period of time and providing support for people who might otherwise find challenges in this space with engaging with healthcare professionals in that area. And as I'm sure you fully appreciate, with the plethora of smartphone use and wearable use that's out there, these are becoming increasingly commonplace. So it's that with that view in mind to the rapidly evolving way healthcare is being delivered that we've chosen to speak today to James Bilzon about lifestyle app and mobile health approaches for people with osteoarthritis. And so James is a professor of human and applied physiology with specific expertise in rehabilitation medicine at the University of Bath in the UK. Hello, James. Welcome to the show.
Nice to see you again, David.
Yeah, it's good to see you and look forward to catching up again in Vienna face-to-face soon as opposed to over the Zoom connection. But before we get into the main content of today, just wondering if you could share with the listeners a little bit more about your background and what a typical day might look like for you.
Yeah, of course. So I started my journey, realized that I was interested in science, but from the perspective of sport and exercise science. So I did my undergraduate degree in sport and exercise science and progressed from there onto a master's degree and realized that my interests were really in injury prevention and rehabilitation. And I was very fortunate that I got a job. My first post was with the Ministry of Defence. And of course, they see a lot of musculoskeletal injuries in their young trainees. So that took me down that path. But I also did my first 2 years. We did a graduate trainee scheme, which involved a lot of leadership training. And so what I've found is that as my career has progressed, I've found myself tending towards and being attracted to leadership roles. And for the last 3 years, I've been director of this Centre for Sport, Exercise and Osteoarthritis, which is a national centre within the UK, sponsored by Versus Arthritis as a charity. And we're really working closely with them now as we finish our sort of research, looking at how we create that impact that we want on patients living with arthritis. I guess a typical day for me, I'm very fortunate that the University of Bath have allowed me the freedom to explore my research. So I'd say 75% of my time is dedicated to research. I still do some lecturing. I still do a bit of student support work. But a typical day for me involves writing research articles, writing research grants, managing research staff, and making sure that our projects stay on track so that we can get to that point where we can make a difference for the people suffering with these conditions.
Yeah, well, I think we both share that wonderful privilege of being in the coalface and hopefully making a difference to many, many people who are out there with the translational work that we do. Now, James, when you're not doing your day job, what do you enjoy doing?
So I've always loved the outdoors, and I'm very fortunate to have a dog who lets me know twice a day that he needs nice long walks in the countryside. And I live in a lovely village in the UK, so I do get some lovely country walks. So even if I have no other structured exercise, I get a good 1.5 hours of walking with the dog each day. I've got a colleague at work who I play badminton with, so I try and get a couple of games of badminton in every week. I'm also trying to get back into my mountain biking. So we're just reaching the point in the year in the UK now where we can really get outdoors and start to enjoy better conditions. So that's my goal for this year, to get out on the bike a bit more.
Wonderful. And are there good places around near where you live for mountain biking?
Yeah, we're really fortunate. There's lots of different places to go, including some nice, flat, old railway lines. So if you're not feeling too energetic, you can still have a nice long ride and see lots of countryside by using some of these now very good cycle paths. But also there's lots of trails through the woods and into the hills. And when you're feeling a bit more adventurous and the ground's a bit drier.
Yeah, no, the conversion of those rail trails has been phenomenal. Yeah. I've been lucky enough to spend a fair bit of time on the Otago Rail Trail in the South Island of New Zealand, but also they've just set one up in the northern part of New South Wales, so the state in which I live in Australia. And I'm going to go and experience that hopefully in the next couple of months, which would be
fantastic.
Fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, actually, as a prelude to going to Vienna this year for the ORSI meeting, catching up with a friend and riding, I think it's a rail trail along the Danube from Salzburg to Vienna, which will be spectacular.
Wow. Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah.
Now, I think the international network of cycling trails now is incredible. And I know the UK are part of this Sustrans movement where they're trying to convert and sustain as many of those trails as possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's great for getting people out and hopefully promoting physical activity and making it more accessible. James, if you had to describe yourself in 5 words, what would they be?
I'm very determined, and when I start something, I like to get it finished. So alongside that, I would also describe myself as industrious. I've always had a very strong work ethic. Occasionally, I can be very competitive. But I think if I was to talk to my staff and students, they would also say supportive and nurturing. And they're two things which I think, as I've progressed through my career, that I've really tried to focus on, because you remember how vulnerable you were at certain times in your career. And I think making a difference for young people trying to set up their own careers is a real gift that we should take with great responsibility.
Yeah, no, there are tremendous qualities. And as you say, nurturing the next generation is so, so important, because, you know, truly, if we're going to make a difference to this disease, we need to enhance the skills and capacity of those people who are coming after us. And so it's wonderful to hear that you're spending a lot of effort and energy in that space as well. Now, James, obviously the focus of today is really talking about lifestyle, app, and mobile health approaches for people with osteoarthritis, and it's on the back of a couple of recent publications that you've had in this space, and obviously a lot of personal interest on our side. But yeah, I guess in the first instance, what from your perspective, both for you and the team, motivated you getting into this aspect of provision of Kelsor, this method or modality of providing health care?
It's interesting, David, that I think you realize as you go through your career that a lot of things happen you feel by accident, but actually they were probably meant to be. And so we've been doing a lot of research trying to understand the physiological effects of why exercise is beneficial for people with joint pain, with a real focus on knee osteoarthritis being the most prevalent form of the condition. And so we've got a rapidly growing number of patients with this condition and really trying to understand. And what we realized through our research is the effects of exercise are relatively short-lived in that they seem to persist for around 24 hours. They seem to help people reduce their symptoms and persist for that relatively short period of time. And what that means is we really need to get people into the habit of exercising regularly if we're going to make a difference for them trying to manage their condition. And so we've done a lot of this research, and I was presenting one day at a meeting at the university, and there was a real mixed audience in the room, including some colleagues from computer science. And one of them came up to me after my presentation, and he'd heard me say, "It's such a shame that we can't get this message out and support people with knee osteoarthritis more readily, because there doesn't seem to be anything out there at the moment that's making a difference." Especially, there's a real focus on that short-term rehabilitation piece, that sort of 6 to 12 week journey, but maintaining people's physical activity throughout the lifespan seemed to be missing. For people who are not from a sporting background, who've been possibly told by their healthcare providers that they should probably go home and rest their hurting knee. This is quite a scary concept to suddenly start engaging in regular exercise, but it works. It really does work. And so we applied for a small grant together. So we got this small grant, and we decided to embark on this journey to develop an mHealth mobile health app that we could take out to the patient population, and we could embed our sort of research findings and best practice within it. So it really started with a short presentation and a small idea.
Yeah, no, wonderful. But I mean, I think at least if I distill at least some of what you said there, I guess the key elements are that, if we look at the traditional way of delivering care, where it's face to face, there may be intermittent visits to the clinician, maybe once a week or once every couple of weeks, and that might last for a couple of months. But we're talking about a disease that's a chronic disease that persists for years. And, I think for a lot of people, they have challenges in sticking to the plan. And I think, one of the key aspects of this type of delivery is hopefully it engages people in their own space in a way that's meaningful for them. So before I steal all of your thunder, can you tell me a little bit about, I guess, what you did in this project, where, the development of the app and how that progressed, and what methodology you used in the development to, I guess, guide, or what framework you used.
It was really important that in that initial step, I was talking to my colleagues in computer science, and we kind of knew what we wanted to do, but we didn't have all of the specific information that we needed. And I'm very fortunate. I'm in a department with lots of disciplines all mixed together, including some behavioural or motivational psychologists. And so we managed to go and meet with one and invite him onto the project. And he'd done some work using what's called the person-centered approach or the person-based approach. And really, what it's about is putting the user, in this case, the person with knee osteoarthritis, at the centre, and actually engaging them in the process of helping you to design, refine, and optimize the product. We started with a literature review, and then we went through this planning phase. And in the planning phase, we did some focus groups with groups of patients, and also some one-to-one interviews with physiotherapists, and trying to get those different perspectives from the user, the knee osteoarthritis patient, but also from the therapists that are trying to treat them. And that allowed us to get enough information to come up with an initial concept and build a prototype. And then what we did is we had some further focus groups, but these were called think aloud sessions. And this is in the sort of refining stage. And what we did is we'd given the users 3 days to use different features within the app and really come to this think aloud session. And when we asked them questions, we just asked them to say the first thing that came into their head about that feature. And so we got some really rich information and feedback about things that worked and things that didn't work so well and things that maybe needed refining and changing. And the sort of motivational psychology bit behind this is, how can we keep people motivated within themselves? It's called intrinsic motivation. How can we keep them motivated to sustain a physically active lifestyle and self-manage their osteoarthritis symptoms over time? And so there are some features about app design which really help with that. So there are these sort of guiding principles of that they're called autonomy, competence, and relatedness. So autonomy is, are you able to just get out and do the things that you enjoy in exercise? Do you have the autonomy to just get out and do those activities? Competence is, well, do you feel confident and that you've got the skills to go and do those things? Or, you know, do we need to think about instructors and group classes and those sorts of things? And then the relatedness is, you know, can we somehow open up a social network for you with other users that you share a condition with and you can share this experience with and you can talk to online? And so really it was trying to build all of those features into the app and then use that sort of patient feedback to refine the product as we move forward. And it seems to have worked incredibly well in terms of getting us to a point where we've got something that, you know, that the users really seem to value and the practitioners. The next step we'll talk about, but potentially allowing users to share their information and their journey with their practitioners, with their physiotherapists.
Yeah, so let's dig a little bit more into what I guess are the key features or elements of the app before we talk about the effects that you found. But sure. Can you just walk us through what the key elements that you tried to feature there around physical activity, education, social support, and how you actually did that in the app?
Yeah. So within the app, there are some key features, including, so the reason we've called it the Intelligent Knee Osteoarthritis Lifestyle App is the intelligent bit is that the startup asks the participant, the user, to engage in a process where they identify the activities that they think they will enjoy, whether they be indoor versus outdoor activities, group classes versus individual activities. And it takes them down this sort of process of really sharing information with the app about the sorts of activities they will enjoy. And then what the app does is it recommends activities based on those decisions that have been entered. And those things can be changed over time. And what it does is it uses a traffic light system where it says, okay, these are the activities which are well suited to the things you've said. These are the things which might be suited to you in amber. And these are the things that currently in red, we don't think you'd currently want to engage in. And so it doesn't recommend those things. And then it allows you to plan a week of activity out. So there's a sort of planning tool in there. There's also a sort of mapping software in there. So it links to opportunities for activities that you've selected within your local area. So that's really useful because for a lot of people, it's just knowing where to go to do the sorts of activities that they will enjoy. You can also set some goals in terms of the amount of physical activity that you think you will be able to do. And you can, again, progress that and change over time. And it links with either a Fitbit or an Apple Watch or a number of other tracking devices so that actually all of your data is being uploaded live onto the system so that you can get feedback on your current physical activity levels, how they're changing over time. The other thing we do is we ask participants to record their symptoms, their musculoskeletal symptoms. So they get prompts each day to record their musculoskeletal symptoms. There's also a short-term version of that where they get to record their symptoms immediately after doing a certain activity. So they can start to see the sorts of activities which trigger their symptoms. And indeed, on the more positive side, the sorts of activities which suppress their symptoms, which is really, really useful. So there's sort of goal setting elements that, and then this sort of social connectedness piece. And the app is modular, and I think one of the things that the users really liked is that they can turn certain features on and off. But a lot of our users really like the social connectedness feature, where they can link up with and even go and do activities with other users in their local area. So I think in summary, that's I've probably missed. There's an educational piece in there about their condition, and instead of reinventing the wheel, what we've done is we've linked in with the Versus Arthritis website, who offer a lot of really good advice on the condition, understanding it, and how to manage it.
Yeah. And just to dig, I mean, obviously, you've covered it incredibly well, both from the viewpoint of the guidance for physical activity, the education, but just wanted to dig into that social support aspect a little bit further. What methodology have you used there to connect people? And are the people with osteoarthritis enthusiastic about it? And I guess what motivated you to have that social support piece there with regards, I guess, encouraging adherence or motivation or whatever it was?
So the main reason we put that in there is because of this these basic psychological needs, autonomy, competence, relatedness, and the relatedness bit. I think it really helps people on their journey if they can connect with other people who have the same condition, and to see and share stories about how they're managing their condition. And so the reason we wanted that in there was for that reason. The reason we made it optional is because we recognized that not everybody would want to do that, but actually we found it to be a very popular feature. And we did find that people were not only using the feature within the app, but they were also then sharing contact details so that they could meet up outside of being an app user. So it does seem to have really taken off, and I think it's an important feature. One of the things that we haven't been able to do fully because we didn't have we had a lot more female participants, users than males, but it does seem that our female users particularly like the social connectedness part, and they also seem to enjoy group-based activities where they can connect with other people in managing their condition.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a vital element. I mean, that peer support, knowing someone else who's maybe going through the same journey you are, provides such a really important, essential element to this. And so you've rolled this out in the context of a trial. Can you just tell us a little bit about the trial and what you found?
Yeah, we decided to go for a relatively simplistic 12-week user trial to start with, because the theory was that if an app is not particularly well designed in terms of user engagement, users will probably start to drop off between the 6 to 12 week point. And obviously, if this is about helping people to manage their long-term condition, we wanted to try and engage people for at least 12 weeks. So we decided to go for that. And with the funding we had available for the study at the time, 12 weeks was around the limit that we could manage. So we got 51 volunteers initially, and 38 of them actually signed up and completed the study. So quite a high proportion of those that initially inquired. And basically, we talked them through the trial over the phone. Research staff sent out the app via email that they could download through a link and a code, but also sent them a Fitbit that they could use to link with the app and download their physical activity data. We then tracked them for that 12-week period, and we then had weekly check-ins for the first 4 weeks, just to make sure that they were able to use the app, that they understood it, that there was nothing that wasn't working. There was a feature on there that they could explain if they were having difficulties, and we had a software engineer working in the background to resolve any issues. So we were able to be very responsive to their needs, which was good, because of course you put these things out there, but there are still teething problems sometimes. So we were able to overcome those quite quickly. But I guess onto the important findings, and I think we were very surprised by how positive the findings were. So first of all, these participants became very active and they sustained a really high level of physical activity for the whole 12 weeks. It didn't drop off. So they were maintaining on average around 10,000 steps per day, which is good for a healthy individual without knee osteoarthritis. So the fact that we were seeing this in knee osteoarthritis users was really positive, because we tend to see steps per day between 5,000 to 7,000 at best in knee osteoarthritis users. So we were pleasantly surprised with the levels of physical activity they were able to sustain. But I guess the most important thing was we saw this significant drop off in their musculoskeletal symptoms across the board. So not just their general musculoskeletal symptoms, but they felt more confident in engaging in activity. They had improved sleep with less pain at night. They experienced less fatigue while they were out exercising and less pain during walking itself. So there were lots of really positive messages coming out of the data that suggested to us that this was making a real meaningful difference to these users, you know, 30% reductions in musculoskeletal symptoms or pain. I guess the thing that we were most delighted about was the amount of time people spent on the app during the trial didn't drop off very much. It was really well maintained. But also, most of the users asked us if they could continue using it when the 12-week trial finished. So that was not even really part of the research study, but a real positive end to the trial for us. So we're really pleased with what we've achieved today. Yeah.
That's wonderful, James. Any learnings either about the app, its usability, or challenges that certain people had in engaging with it that would be worthwhile sharing?
Yeah, I think one of the things we changed quite early on was I think it's important not to over-engineer things. So we were giving lots of prompts to individuals to record musculoskeletal symptoms, to engage in exercise, to record their exercise. And I think some of them found it quite overwhelming. So they asked if they could switch the daily prompts off. And I think the main message I've learned, and sort of reflecting on that and other sort of feedback, is I think it's important to make these things modular. Make sure that people can, they will ultimately start to turn different features on as they go. But I think if you hit them with all of the features at once, it can be quite overwhelming. So I think making it modular and making these things optional was really important in terms of the steps we took in the design process. I'd also say I think we got very different points of feedback from physiotherapists and patients. Mm-hmm. And so I think making sure that you get that sort of global perspective about best practice and guidance. The other thing we did, which I think was really important, is we didn't want this to become an exercise prescription. We didn't want people to enter some information and then feel that they were being told what to do every day. You know, this has to be choiceful. People need to decide whether or not to, if it's going to be sustainable, how to engage.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think trying to tell people to do exercises that they don't want to do or they're otherwise unaccustomed to and don't want to engage with is probably going to be like beating your head against a wall. So I mean, obviously the goals here have to be personal and tailored according to what their wishes are. So yeah. James, that's great. Thank you for sharing those insights. Where are you going with the app from here?
So we've just prepared a research grant application, but it's quite different this time. So this is called an Invention for Innovation grant. So it's a particular scheme running the UK, because what we need to do now is make sure that we can. So the prototype was an Android version. We need a version now that can operate across all platforms, including iOS users, so that it works on iPhone as well. We also need to make sure that the app is desirable across different socio-cultural backgrounds. So the sample, which was an opportune sample that we're able to get for the user trial, I would say was predominantly white middle class. And so we're really keen to see this next iteration used across different socio-cultural backgrounds and get feedback from people from those different backgrounds as to how we can refine and optimize the platform. We've also, and part of our grant application, we've been talking to our colleagues who are movement specialists in biomechanics, and they've said that there's really good opportunities now to engage additional tools within the platform so that people can analyze their movement quality to try and reduce the forces acting through the knee joint. And so we're engaging them in the next stage of the project so that we can go beyond what we've already achieved and engage with some additional features. So I think there's still a bit of a journey to be done before we can sort of open this up to the wider market. But some people are encouraging us just to go ahead as we are, but also progress with the additional developments. I guess I just feel a little bit guilty that we're only able to reach out to Android users currently, and I'd like it to be available to all. So we're trying to accelerate that process and move ahead as quickly as we can, but there's still a bit of development work to be done.
Yeah, no, it's great to hear where you're going, and I think particularly that aspect of understanding what exercises people are doing and ascertaining whether their technique is appropriate using. I mean, and I don't know whether you're planning to use computer vision or something like that, but there's
Yes.
some of the technology out there is absolutely phenomenal. Did you? I mean, obviously you had people volunteer for your trial, but did you have any challenges with technology literacy or issues with people taking up the app and learning how to use it?
We didn't particularly, but again, I'm slightly concerned that that's partly because of the population that we attracted to the trial. We do find with these sorts of trials that the sorts of people that volunteer and come forward tend to be people who are comfortable with that type of technology that we're engaging in. So we need to put much more effort into a stratified sample for the next version of the trial to make sure that we're getting that feedback from all of those different user groups. But so pleased with where we've got to for now, but I think there are still questions that need to be answered around whether it's suitable for all or whether it could be simplified.
So it sounds like it's not commercially available at this point in time, but
No.
is there a site that people can go to if they want to learn more, or is there anything else that you wanted to share about the app and or its development?
Yes, I mean for anyone that's an Android user, we're happy for it to be used, and so I can share details with you at the University of Bath where that can be downloaded.
So we'll include that link in the show notes.
Yes.
Excellent. So, James, I guess just in closing, can you just tell me a little bit about how you continue to learn in order to stay on top of things within your role?
I've become much more open in sharing my thoughts and ideas with others, and I love going to conferences and meetings and talking to people like yourself, and also listening to my research staff and my students, as well as patients. And I think sometimes we can, early in our careers, we're so focused on achieving a very specific goal that we can be quite closed sometimes. Somebody said to me, "You're very open with your research ideas, James. Are you not worried that people?" I said, "Look, I haven't got enough years left in my job to be able to do everything I want to do, so let's just work together and move things ahead quicker." So I'm much more open now than I used to be. But with my research staff and students, they're reading the latest literature all of the time, and they're on top of things. And I think making time to have conversations with them is really important.
Yeah, I mean, I think collaboration is so important, and sharing insights and knowledge is so, for at least from the perspective of a researcher, one way to really accelerate things. And, historically, obviously, I think a lot of researchers used to try and operate in their own silo, but I think one thing the UK in particular has done very well is bring people together who are working on similar areas and into that programmatic style of research, so that it sort of weeds out the silos. And if you don't want to survive in that collaborative space where you share intelligence, you're not going to do very well.
I mean, I just look back to that. This app would have never come around if I hadn't just gone to this meeting and presented my latest research on exercise and knee osteoarthritis, where there was a bunch of behavioral psychologists and computer scientists in the room. So it's a good example of how these things work.
Yeah, those opportunities for cross-fertilization are so valuable. Now, James, what's your primary motivation? Why do you do what you do?
I gave this a lot of thought, and I've always loved the research process and being involved, primarily because you feel like you're making a positive contribution and you're making a difference. But I think that's why I've always positioned myself as part of what I'd call a translational research team. You're not just doing research for the sake of it, you're doing it with a view to producing something that will go out there and make a difference in the world. And a lot of the projects I've been involved in, I've been quite fortunate in that, either fortunate or through planning, I've seen a lot of my research reach a user endpoint quite quickly. And that's really rewarding because you can get that positive feedback almost instantly that you're making a good contribution. So I think I get very frustrated with people who they're involved in research, but they can't tell you really what their end goal is or why they're engaged in that research. And so I try and push them to work with other people to make sure that happens.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine working in a space like that where everything is so secretive and you can't share it, and it's presumably competitive intelligence or whatever it might be, inevitably must be frustrating, and you lose a lot of the reward by not being in a position where you can share comfortably.
Yes.
Now,
Absolutely.
James, with all of the wonderful work that you and the team have done, wondering if you have any piece of advice, knowledge, or wisdom that you think would be incredibly valuable to share for people who are out there living with osteoarthritis.
Yeah, so I think we live in a fairly hectic world now with a lot of pressure on people in all sorts of different ways. But I think my one piece of advice would be, try and make time for at least 30 minutes of exercise on most days of the week. And, I say that not just because it will help with managing the osteoarthritis or even preventing some of these conditions, but the number of other conditions that it can prevent. And once you get out of the habit, it's incredibly difficult to get back into. We're learning so much about how we need to protect our muscle mass as we age. And it's really important for all sorts of health outcomes. And so, if people don't even feel that they can get out of the house sometimes, there's lots of really good advice out there about things you can do in and around the home to maintain your muscle strength. Exercise snacking is a sort of a common term that's used now. These sort of 2 or 3 10-minute bouts of strengthening exercises you can do even in the home each day is incredibly meaningful and effective. So I think try and find that 30 minutes a day to do some meaningful exercise.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great, positive, empowering way for us to close our conversation today. Keep up the wonderful work, and really looking forward to hopefully having a chat relatively soon about this and other things face to face. So thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, David. Enjoyed talking to you again.
So again, these applications, both in mobile digital health, the use of wearables, are rapidly changing the way healthcare is being delivered. We're seeing some early entrees into the space for people with osteoarthritis that are providing solutions around tailored physical activity, education, and social support, such as the app that we've spoken to James about today. There are a number of others that are out there that are being developed, including one that we've recently begun testing. Again, it's an area of rapid evolution, which I'm sure you'll continue to see over time, but hopefully something that will be useful for you in engaging in a much more personalized, goal-oriented way that's meaningful for you in allowing you to adhere to better management plans for your arthritis over a longer period of time. We'll include a number of links from James's papers and the app for the Android in the show notes for today's show. Again, thank you so much for your continued support of the Joint Action podcast. And between now and when we next have an opportunity to interact, please look after yourself.
Thanks for listening to Joint Action with David Hunter. If you like our show and want to know more, visit www.jointaction.info. If you have any questions, you can email us at hello@jointaction.info and follow us on Twitter at jointaction.org. This podcast was hosted by David Hunter, edited by Vicky Duong, music produced by Jordan Hunter. The information posted on this podcast is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent disease. Anyone seeking medical advice should consult a health professional.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.